Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. Roy, I'm delighted again to talk about how what we're doing to build better workplaces at Rideau's Recognition Management Institute and so many wonderful people out there in this world on this cause with us, if you will.
I agree with you, and I think when we're talking about leading out in this way, I think we're going to have a great show as we kind of, I think, just take another little snapshot on leadership from a different perspective.
Absolutely. Of course, our guest today is, his name is Bill Treasurer. He is the founder and chief encouragement officer at Giant Leap Consulting, and he's the author of Courage Goes to Work, and of course, today we're talking about his new book, Leaders Open Doors. His insights have been featured in over 100 newspapers and the Washington Post, Daily News, Chicago Tribune, and on and on. He's a former member of the U.S. high diving team, which would put me in big trouble. For 7 years, he traveled throughout the world performing with the team and high-performing athletes. And during that time, he did over 1,500 dives from heights of scaled over 100 feet. And he led workshops for NASA, Accenture, CNN, Earthlink, Home Depot, Spanx, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Bill, we are just happy to have you on the show. Grateful that you would join us with this message.
Well, Roy and Max, it's my pleasure to be here today. I'm so looking forward to spending time with you and talking about the concepts from Leaders Open Doors. So thanks so much for having me.
Well, and I know we could talk about a lot of things today, but we do want to talk about that for sure. And so why this title? I mean, a lot of people might say, well, Leaders Open Doors, yeah, that makes sense. But I think, as you point out in the book, we might take this a bit for granted. Can you explain a bit for why this title?
Well, the title came to me, you know, I've been practicing leadership development. I've been a practitioner for over 20 years. I did my thesis on it in graduate school. I worked for a couple of small boutique consulting companies. I've done over 500 team-building events. And then I worked for the world's largest management consulting company, Accenture. And so, you know, I'm a bit of a brainiac when it comes to leadership development. But I had a conversation with my five-year-old son that showed me that I knew so much that I really didn't know anything. I knew too much to complexify the idea of leadership. And here's what happened with my five-year-old son. He got to be the class leader for the day. And my wife said, honey, make a big deal of this. Ian got to be the class leader for the day. So you can imagine how much pride I had over this. I've been teaching leadership development, and now my little five-year-old gets to be the class leader. So I said, come here, Ian, that's awesome. You get to be class leader. What'd you get to do? And I'm thinking that he's going to tell me, well, I directed the people, I got them in a straight line, and I made sure that they all sat in their seats at the same time, and I managed the time. And he looked at me with his big, big, bright eyes and innocently said, I got to open doors for people. Mm-hmm. And I thought, it just kind of made my head tilt like the RCA Victor dog. And I kind of went, wow, there's so much truth to that little thing that he said. I'm telling you, I believe that within 5 minutes, I knew that there was a book there. Because I started to think about all the leaders that had impacted me over the course of my life, and I'm sure that it's the same for you too, Roy and Max, that they're people who opened doors for me. They gave me a shot when other people wouldn't. They gave me a chance to prove myself to myself. They took a real interest in me, and they found a germ of potential in myself and believed in it before I believed in it myself. They were simply people who opened doors for me. And that's what led me to the title of my book, A Conversation with a Five-Year-Old Kid.
That's a great story, and I enjoyed reading that, actually, because quite literally, leaders do open doors. And yet, you mentioned in the book at the beginning there that leadership's become so complex, maybe too complex. Like, we've just made it way more complicated than it even needs to be. So what kind of message are you hoping people will take away?
Well, I'm hoping that we can simplify the idea of leadership and bring it back to the core truth that leadership isn't about the leader. It's about those being led. And are we focusing on them? You know, leaders, we preoccupy ourselves so much, we fixate on the idea of getting results, that we often do so at the expense of the means to the results. You know, results matter, but the way that you get those results are through the treatment of the people. That's the means. And so I'm hoping that we bring leadership back to the simple idea that leaders should be people who provide the people that you lead with opportunities to grow and develop.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I really liked how you mentioned in the book as well that so many leadership gurus, because of ego or trying to prove themselves, have tried to make it more complex than it needs to be. And I like how you wrote, you know, hey, I'm old enough now to realize this is not about my ego. This is about making an impact, and that I don't need to make it look more than it is. This is the essence of leadership.
I think I was trying to prove how smart I was to people, which ultimately is kind of dumb. I mean, when I think about it, all of us leadership, quote, experts, unquote, you know, we've taken this idea of leadership and complexified it so much and nuanced it so much and inflated the expectations of what we want a leader to be. I mean, think about what we want a leader to be. We want them to be bold and calculated. We want them to be passionate, which is entirely unreasonable, and then we want them to also be reasonable. We want them to be confident, but we also want them to have humility. We want them to be driven, which is really competitive, but we also want them to be patient. We want them to be flexible, but we want them to be resolved. We want them to be tactical, but we want them to be strategic. You know, it's just not realistic to expect a leader to live into these inflated expectations. And I think so much about leadership development has been about the writer or the practitioner proving how smart they are, instead of coming up with ideas that are simple and resonate with people that are actually going to be put to use. So, let's do away with the quadrant models. Let's stop referring to old ancient journals that nobody reads. Let's look at the core of leadership and bring it back to the simple idea that let's start creating opportunities for the people we lead. That's what leadership is about.
Yeah, well said. Well said. So with this in mind, all right, why is there still so much fear in the workplace? Because you talk about this in the book, and yet it still seems very pervasive. I mean, Edward Deming, you know, back in the 50s, 1950s, to get into it, he said, let's get fear out of the workplace if we want workplaces to be better. So what's going on? Why is this still so hard to achieve?
Yeah, you're right. You know, Edward Deming, in one of his 14 points, his famous three words, drive out fear. You know, that's one of the leaders' job. And here we are 50 years later plus and still talking about it. Despite unprecedented access to contemporary management thinking, a lot of people, when pressure and anxiety come into the workplace, we start resorting back to leadership behaviors that you might have seen in a salt mine in Egypt 2,000 years ago. We just drive people through stoking fear. Meg Wheatley, the great leadership theorist, said that fear has become the primary motivator in the workplace. To answer your question, I've really been thinking about that. I've been thinking about it since the book, but I've been thinking about it since my other book. And even this week, I was in Toronto this week working with a group, and somebody asked me the very same question. You know, after all these years, why are we still dealing with this issue of fear? I think that what I've keyed into recently is that I think because fear works. I think that at the end of the day, that people wouldn't do it if it didn't get results. The challenge is that it gets results in the short term. In the short term, people will jump really high if you sort of electrocute their feet to make them jump through fear. But I think what we fail to recognize is the diminishing returns on performance over time. We're such a short-term focused society. whether it be short-term focus on results, because each quarter Wall Street is demanding that we take a short-term focus, or even sort of the instant gratification that we need from all of our technological tethers, we're so short-term focused that fear works, because fear works in the short. I think that the challenge is, if for leaders, is to start getting a longer-term view, because if you study the impacts of fear on performance, if you are a red-blooded capitalist, you wouldn't use fear to stoke people's performance. You know, they've done some research on fear and performance, and it turns out that people with fear-provoking bosses are twice as likely to be depressed. And we know high depression has a negative impact on job performance. People with fear-provoking bosses are also three times more likely to suffer from sleep disorders. And we know sleep disorders impact job performance negatively. Even a Finnish study a few years ago showed that people with a fear-provoking boss are 39% more likely to suffer from coronary heart disease.
Yeah.
So a fearful boss can accelerate your death. So all of that, in my mind, you know, just sort of underscores the notion that, hey man, if you care about performance, if you care about shareholder value, if you're a capitalist and like to make money, don't stoke people's fear. It gives you the exact wrong performance impact over time.
And I think that's the key to this whole thing, isn't it? It's not about saying kumbaya, but without an interest in mind, this is real profit, real capital, really good business.
Exactly. I think, and it kind of goes back to that idea that we've got to stop having such a short-term focus, and we have to stop running our businesses on fear and anxiety, because what we'd rather have is confident performers, not skittish performers.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson with our guest today, Bill Treasurer. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Stay tuned, because we'll be right back.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with Max Brown, and our guest today, Bill Treasurer. And Bill, you know, in your book, you do some wonderful typologies here, and you talk about spillers and fillers. For our listeners' benefit, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. It goes into the notion of are you putting fear inside of people, or are you putting confidence and courage inside of people with your leadership? You know, I think some leaders transmit their own anxieties. You'll even hear it in a leader's voice, though. You know, they'll talk about what keeps me awake at night. So what keeps me awake at night is the competition that is furiously down our necks. What keeps me awake at night is we're not putting in the technology as quick as we need to. Or what keeps me awake at night is that we're falling asleep. And, you know, it's like they take anxiety as a badge of honor. The fact that they don't sleep at night, that they want everybody else in the workforce to be just as worried about them, about the business. Otherwise, they won't be able to sleep. I call those people spillers, because what they're doing is they're in fearing people. They're putting fear inside of people, and they're transmitting their own fears. And then the workforce, you know, if they transmit it at decibel 6, the workforce picks it up at decibel 8, and then everybody's running around with their hair on fire and operating out of fear and anxiety. I contrast that with a different leadership style that is willing to do hard things themselves, but instead of putting fear inside of people, instead of talking about what keeps them awake at night, they talk about what gets them up in the morning and what they're confident about and what opportunities they see into the future and how they want people to marshal around those opportunities and charge the hill with them. That kind of leader ends up putting courage inside of people, the literal translation of the word encouragement, and they yield a lot of loyalty because people want to work for leaders like that. At the end of the day, a spiller ends up with a fearful workforce and a filler ends up with a confident workforce. And I think you'd rather have confident workers working for your business than people that are squirrely with anxiety.
Well, absolutely. And then you're talking about encouragement there. And I'm curious if we can just pursue that, because some people, you know, we get stuck in the way we've done things. We get into our comfort zones. And you're suggesting the idea of actually provoking growth and encouraging people. How do we do that without setting people up for failure?
You know, it's a great question, because I go back to what the CEO of IBM, her name is Ginni Rometty, and here's what she said. She said, growth and comfort don't coexist. And the reality is that if you want people to grow and progress and develop, it won't be in a zone of comfort. Now, these are things that people in the workforce will tell you that they want. It's what brings about higher engagement. They want growth opportunities. They want to develop. They want to become a stronger performer. And yet, in order to do that, they have to experience discomfort. So your job as a leader is to nudge people into a zone of discomfort, to prevent complacency, to not allow people to get sort of bored over time. But you've got to do it in doses that are absorbable by the people that you lead. If you push them too far out into the discomfort zone, they'll experience fight, flight, or freeze. But it's got to be enough into the zone of discomfort where they're actually learning and growing and developing. So I think that the first thing is the leader needs to, A, be willing to do uncomfortable things themselves. You know, your job as a leader, first and foremost, is to be a good role model of the very things you're asking the workforce to do. And then second, your job as a leader is to nudge people into discomfort as well, based on the things that they want to achieve in their career and the goals that the organization wants to achieve.
Okay, I like that idea of nudging, because it's not a full push. And I think I'm like Max. I think I would be dead in the water if I was even at the heights that you've dove off. But how do you get into you nudge into the discomfort? But how do you help those that you're trying to help grow? How do you help them to see risk as a positive thing?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and it does relate to this idea of high diving. You know, I no high diver in their right mind would go up to a 100-foot platform and take even one jump from 100 feet without first taking 100 jumps from 1 foot. You have to help people sort of modulate between comfort and discomfort. And it's interesting, because the way we become high divers is we actually start on the pool deck to do 100 jumps, and we get a little bit bored, and then we move the platform up to 10 feet. And now our heart starts to beat a little bit rapidly. And our coach on the deck would tell us to do 25 jumps from 10 feet. And after we got bored, that became the signal that we needed to move back into discomfort. And then we'd bring the platform up to 20 feet, and heart would be racing, and you'd be really scared. And You know, you'd push back on your coach and tell him you didn't want to do anymore, and the coach would make you accountable and say, come on, do one more. And but after about 50 or 100 jumps, you started to get bored again. So it's this idea of modulating between comfort and discomfort and providing the discomfort in absorbable doses rather than pushing people right off of a 100-foot cliff or platform. You've got to incrementally do it in a way that they're able to adjust to it and absorb it so that you don't demoralize them. They need to be right. as much a part of that process as you do as the leader.
Wow, that's a wonderful example, and it's kind of interesting you say actually people get bored, which is what a lot of people in the workplace are going through right now when there are no growth opportunities, right?
Yeah, you know, when we do our leadership development workshops, we have a courageous leadership workshop that we do, and one of the things that we'll ask people in the very beginning of the workshop is we'll say to identify one specific action that, if you were to take it, could significantly enhance your career. And a lot of people can't think of that action right away. So we invite them to answer a second question, which often leads them to the answer to the first question. And the second question is, where are you playing it too safe? Where are you playing it too safe in your own career? And you might be the only one who knows the answer to that question. But a lot of times the area that you're playing it too safe is because you've gotten too comfortable. And if you admit it, you're getting a little bit bored there. And then challenge, that movement back into discomfort towards a stretch goal, becomes the antidote for that complacency and potentially apathy, which is dangerous for the person and their career and for the business.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we all know how important recognition and appreciation is in the workplace, but how do you make it sincere and heartfelt? What do you recommend to leaders who may even struggle with being able to give appropriate recognition?
You know, I think it's, first of all, it's so critically important, and I love the work that the two of you do, that this is so much a part of your work, and it's so necessary. You know, the other thing I'd say is that a little goes a long way. It doesn't have to be a lavishment. It doesn't have to be overboard. Sometimes it's just a simple thank you that can make a big difference. I think to your question, how can you do it sincerely, even for people who may struggle with doing it? I think that the first thing is that it should be personal. That you should make it personal. I'll give you a very quick example. When I was at Accenture, I remember being involved in putting together an offsite event, and I had been involved with the committee that had done it the 3 years before. This year, I elected not to be on that committee, but they kept asking me for ideas, and so I'd come back and I'd give them some thinking on how to do it and such, and the event came off fantastic. And at the end of the event, the leader got up in front of the room full of people. He was my boss. And he thanked all of the people on the committee who had been involved. And he specifically named them, and everybody gave them applause and such. But because I wasn't actually on the committee, I didn't get any of the recognition. And I didn't think it would bother me. And it really, you know, I'm sure I'm a sore loser, and I've got a fragile ego or something. But it really bothered me. And so I quietly left the offsite meeting a little bit early and drove home sulking, thinking about how nobody loves me. And and then I got a phone call on the way home from my boss. It was actually, it was the next day. It was a Saturday. And I checked my voicemail, and as we shouldn't do, but I checked my voicemail, my work voicemail at the time. And it was a voicemail from my boss. And he was just checking in saying, hey, Bill, I wanted to let you know that yesterday I thanked everybody. And I wanted to let you know privately how much I appreciated everything you did this year to make this event successful. And I knew that you did a lot of stuff behind the scenes. A simple phone call of thank you, personal, from him to me, shifted my thinking. It was like sprinkling pixie dust over my attitude. So sometimes it's just a simple thank you, an acknowledgement, a validation that you're a person of worth and that somebody sees that you've done something. And just lets you know that they notice you. Sometimes it's simple and personal can go a long, long way.
Mm-hmm. How do you think we can help those leaders who may struggle in being able to do this effectively?
Well, you know, sometimes they may have grown up that way. You know, I live sort of in the South. I live in North Carolina. It's kind of a border state between the North and the South. And a lot of people in the South are brought up that it's prideful to get any sort of recognition, and so they don't sort of seek it out. And then it becomes difficult for those people who don't believe they should get it because it's prideful. It becomes difficult for them to give it. I think that it's letting them know that I think the place might be to start is to have a conversation with them. What is it like for them to receive a thank you, a simple thank you? And I think a lot of people would have to admit that it feels good, especially when you've done hard work and such. And maybe it's creating the awareness that even though they may not personally need it, that a lot of people do need it. And sometimes it's a matter of just validating the hard work, not necessarily the good work. I think sometimes we are reluctant to give feedback and accolades and thank yous because we don't feel that we can thank them for the quality of the job. It didn't reach our level of perfectionism. I think sometimes, you know, just to let them know, just validate the hard work that somebody did, not necessarily the good work. I would say it's challenging that if a person's not good at getting it, they're probably not good at giving it. But it doesn't mean that the people that they lead don't need it. At the end of the day, I think all of us need a nice thank you, some level of affirmation.
I totally agree with you. And you know, Bill, as we kind of do in our work around recognition, I think you're right in that we need to validate the importance of the need in the eyes of people and help those leaders that struggle just get more confident at doing the right things.
I think so. I wouldn't tell this to the leader, but I've considered this whole notion of recognition, and I actually think it has to do with generosity, and it has to do with generosity of spirit. You know, at the end of the day, if you struggle with saying thank you to somebody, to me that's a little stingy. I think that it's about having a generous spirit and sharing with a person the gratitude that you have for something that they've done. And sharing gratitude is just like sharing a gift. And if you withhold your gifts and if you withhold your thank yous, ultimately it's stingy.
Well, we know you not being stingy with us, and we want to thank you for sharing these insights with us. Bill, we're going to have to take another quick break here, but for all of our listeners, come back in a few minutes here on Rideau's Real Recognition Radio as we continue our conversation with our guest today, Bill Treasurer, and learn more about Leaders Open Doors. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Saunderson along with Max Brown. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. The experts are here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson, myself, Max Brown, and of course our guest today is Bill Treasurer. Bill, as you were speaking with Roy during that last segment there, I was enjoying this conversation around why recognition is so important. And we think about great leaders in our own life and those who have inspired us. I know you wrote about four skills that an open door leader has. Can you tell us what those might be and why they're so important, maybe even a leader who's inspired you along the way?
Sure. You know, I dedicated Leaders Open Doors to five leaders that had made a significant impact on me. And when I got to thinking about what was it that those people did and did they share anything in common, I identified four things that I think that leaders who are open door leaders, that they do. The first is that they get to know their employees. It's not just about the goals of the organization and sort of directing the team to move towards those goals. If they take a genuine interest in learning about the people that are working for them, they ask those people what their goals and aspirations are. What do they want to achieve in their career? So first, they get to know their people. Secondly, they get to match the suitedness. They try to understand, is this person well suited for the opportunities that they might have that could grow and develop their skills based on what that person said that they wanted to grow element. And then thirdly, they envision results together. They work with that person to think about what results should that person be focused on. So they get to know the person. They match the suitedness to an opportunity that they might have. Thirdly, they envision results with that person that they're leading. And then fourthly, they provide ongoing support. They don't just ditch the person when they give them an opportunity to grow and develop. They stay there every step of the way like a good coach and provide support and remove barriers to that person's performance. So those four things, they know employees, they match their suitedness of that person's skills with the opportunities that they might have to help them grow. Thirdly, they envision results together with that person. And then fourthly, they provide ongoing support. I'll share with you a person that had made a very big impact in my own life. And his name is Dr. Henry L. Thompson. He goes by Dick Thompson. And Dick was my very first boss, and this is over 25 years ago, in the area of leadership development. Now, he was wrapped a little tight. You know, Dick's an ex-military guy. He was a lieutenant colonel. He fought in Vietnam. He did two tours behind enemy lines and special forces. He has a PhD. He was the head of the ROTC program at a major university in the South. And as much as he was a learned guy, and I could respect him, I was also a little bit afraid of him because he was kind of wrapped a little bit tight, and he's a very strong introvert. So one day I had the opportunity to go with Dick up to the North Georgia Mountains to lead a team development program for a group of leaders, and we were going to be taking a two-hour ride together in his car. And frankly, I wasn't looking forward to it all that much because, you know, I was a little intimidated by him, in awe of him, but definitely intimidated by him. Nothing that he did, just who he was, that I couldn't get to know him. I didn't really know him. So I was, sort of afraid of him. And on the way up, he looked at me before he started the car, and he said, Bill, would you mind if I turned on some music for the drive? I thought for 2 hours I'm going to have to listen to gospel music. I really didn't know what, And he put on Creedence Clearwater Revival, and he put on Run Through the Jungle, which is a great rock and roll song, and it's almost a Vietnam anthem. And for 2 hours on that car ride, Dick Thompson revealed himself to me, and he shared stories of what it was like to lead groups of people in Vietnam. And he shared stories about how, you know, in the nighttime, you didn't wake up because things were loud. You woke up when things got quiet, because that meant something was lurking in the jungle canopy. He told me what it was like to lead a group of people that you developed a brotherhood, that you were supporting each other. You literally had each other's back, because if you didn't, somebody could die. And believe me, if somebody did die, you'd carry that hurt with you for months on end. He shared with me ideas about leadership and personal stories that went way beyond textbooks and way beyond, you know, theoretical models of leadership. They were very visceral experiences of leadership. He didn't let it all hang out. He didn't maintain that posture of openness. It was a moment in time, and there were other moments in time later on that Dick revealed himself to me. But it showed me that he cared enough about me, that he saw who I was, that he was going to reveal some of himself beyond just his role as leader to me. And it made all the difference. You know, it made me ultimately transformed my opinion of him, made me less intimidated of him, made me revere him more, and made me more loyal to him and less judgmental.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, and it's an interesting observation because a lot of people are afraid to show that vulnerability with their employees, you know, that somehow that vulnerability, being too human with people, might lose their credibility, but in fact it enhances it.
I think you're right. I think that a lot of times leaders want to stay in the, quote, role, unquote, of a leader. They're in the performance of a leader. They like to keep the, quote, authoritative distance. And what happens, they're so afraid of losing that distance of professionalism that somehow that they'll get clouded in their judgment, that they'll be taken advantage of, that they'll be seen as weak. And ultimately, this very strong man, Dick Thompson, if anything, he gained even more credibility and legitimacy in my eyes. And I came away with not just a respect based on fear, but a deep affection for the man. And the beauty of this story ultimately is that, you know, 25 years later, I got to bring Dick Thompson in on a client engagement that was now, you know, I had started my own company and a client had asked for a stress management workshop. And I was able to bring in Dick Thompson, who's written a number of books on stress, and I got to honor him in front of 25 other leaders and tell them what a huge impact that he had made on my life. And I got to look him directly in the eyes and thank him for taking an interest in a little, you know, a kid who didn't know much about leadership at the time. But he set me on my way. He gave me a shot at finding a career, and it made all the difference.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's nice that you're able to also have that kind of a comeback, you know, a loop, if you will, to be able to bring and reinforce that appreciation you felt for him. Yeah, another good story that I enjoyed in the book was this one about Mr. Fusion and second chances. What can we learn from this as leaders when we're out there trying to, you know, get things done?
Yeah, so that chapter is called A Door to a Second Chance. And I think a lot of leaders, unfortunately, that when somebody makes a mistake, they just want to take that mistake maker's nose and rub it in it like it's, you know, like they're an errant dog and really smush their face in the mistake and make sure they don't make that mistake again. It's all punishment, and it's all about compliance to the leader's authority. I think that a more evolved leader can take a mistake and turn it into a second chance. And if you give the right person a second chance in the right moment in their career, you can change the course of their career for the betterment forever. The story of Mr. Fusion is actually a true story that the government had some computer breaches. This is before Gulf War I. And one of the breaches was into a Department of Defense system. And for months, they couldn't locate who had broken into their system, who had hacked into their system. And when they finally found the person, it was a 16-year-old kid who in chat rooms was going by the name of Mr. Fusion. And so a guy named Jim Christie, who was the special investigator at the time, said, "All right, Mr. Fusion, you are in big, big trouble. You've broken into government systems. You can go to jail for a very long time. But you have some very interesting skills." And Mr. Fusion made a good judgment call. He said, "Look, you're a 16-year-old kid. You've done something here that is very dangerous, and you could go to jail. On the other hand, you have some very interesting skills. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a chance to put those skills to work for the government. If you will agree to this, then I personally will go to bat on your behalf to try to keep you out of jail." And what he did in that is he gave Mr. Fusion a chance, and the chance was this: Mr. Fusion would now be working on behalf of the government to break into government computer systems with a small team of government operators watching. He was able to break into 200 systems, and those people, those from those agencies, oftentimes never let the government know that they had gotten broken into because they were too embarrassed. And so he showed the government vulnerabilities. The beauty of this story is the smart, evolved leadership talent of Jim Christie, by making this judgment call of giving this person a second chance versus throwing them in jail for many years and letting them rot. Like so many leaders would have made that choice. But instead, he made a conversion. He took this hacker and
turned
into a white hat cracker. And now, Mr. Fusion runs a business that is a cyber warfare business on behalf of the United States that has 50 white hat hackers who crack the codes for our government. When I say cyber warfare, I want you to know that they are not involved in anything that kills anyone. They prevent killing by disrupting other bad guy governments before they're able to do anything bad to us. They do disrupt computer systems and such. But they work on our behalf. They're patriots. And all because they were able to get a hacker kid who easily could have done some serious damage had he gone off in the wrong direction and kept on that path. But this guy gave him a second chance, and it made all the difference.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me, is that we don't have to be as dramatic. You know, obviously, we don't even need to threaten people the option of jail or, you know, turnaround contribution. But just being able to recast people in a better way or shining on their strengths as opposed to doing something different gives them that opportunity to bring them around. Essentially, and your book pointed this out in a couple places, but something that Gallup's talked about, a lot of people have talked about, but we just need to show people that we actually care, and that if we demonstrate that care, that loyalty, that ability to contribute follows.
So much so. I mean, I think that all of us have one central question, and leaders need to be very aware of this, that every single employee who works with them down deep has this central question that matters a great deal. And the question is, do you care about me?
Follow me.
We all want to know that of each other. And
if
a person thinks that you don't really care about them, that you're really all about the output that they're going to give to you, or you're really all about the results that you need to get through that person's work, but you really don't care about them, they're kind of a cog in the machine, then they're not going to have any loyalty to you. Because people, you know, you may say that you care about somebody, but if you're constantly accelerating the deadlines, if you never solicit their ideas, if you never say thank you, if you always walk around with a grimace on your face, then you really don't care about people. You might say it, but you don't.
Yeah.
And until you're able to really care about people, you're going to get, you won't get the results that you possibly could get if you did care about them, and you won't get the loyalty. At the end of the day, they're going to be far more loyal to the leader who cares about them than the one who doesn't.
Yeah. Bill, it's time to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to get that last segment. Make sure you have some time to share with people how they can get a hold of you and find out where your book is and everything like that. So for Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at RIDEAU.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com. You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish off our conversation today with Bill Treasurer and just learn some final pointers on how leaders open doors. And there are a lot of door openers in your book, but I'm curious about the door to your open heart. What do we do to kind of open that door?
I think that the example of Dick Thompson's a good one. This willingness to reveal who you are beyond the role of leader yourself, to be able to share some of your personal experiences, to share the real you, if you will, to reveal your own heart to people before expecting them to reveal any of theirs to you. The door to your open heart is built around that single important question: do you really care about me? Do you notice me? Do you know that I even exist? Am I somebody beyond just being an instrument in the machine here at the organization? Do you realize that I'm a human being who has a life outside of work? And please take an interest in that, because that matters too. So the door to open your open heart has to do with the strength, the courage, the willingness to be vulnerable and experience vulnerability.
I'm curious, Bill, what do you wish you would have known earlier in your career, and why is that? What have you kind of gained from that insight?
I really like that question. Really like that question. And I will be rawly honest. I wish I had spent less time being envious of others. I think that envy is an interesting thing. It's very covetous. It wants what the other people have. And I think I spent so much time in envy that I was never able to celebrate other people's successes in the way that I'm able to now. And ultimately, it was stingy in and of itself. I think that what I've learned along the way is that generosity matters, and that in giving to others, you don't lose anything yourself. By building others up, you make the environment more positive. For instance, this book, Leaders Open Doors, 100% of the royalties from this book are going to programs that support kids with special needs. I just felt like the book needs to live its own message, and I really don't care about making any money about the book. I want the book to be opening doors of opportunity. This is a totally different Bill Treasurer than I was, say, 15 or 20 years ago, when I was all about my own ambition and climb and very envious of others. Now, I'm just at a place in life, I'm 50, I really care more about giving back and being and sharing truths for me that might resonate with you. So I guess I wish I'd spent a lot less time in envy and a lot more time in generosity, and maybe I'm trying to make up for it now.
Wow, powerful insights, so, Bill. Appreciate you sharing them and being candid with us. I'm curious, for those, you know, there are a lot of individuals rise from a management position. They are perhaps technically skilled and strong in their profession, and all of a sudden they're thrust into this leadership role. What advice would you offer to those who truly want to be good leaders?
I would advise anyone who wants to be a good leader, an aspiring or a budding leader, somebody new in a leadership role, that to balance, that you have to attend to two things. The bottom line matters a great deal, and you absolutely have to attend to the bottom line. You also have to attend to the heart line, the lifeline, if you will, the pulse of the organization. So you have to have a dual focus, a dual allegiance. You have to be loyal to the company and its goals and the results that get them, the bottom line. But you also have to have an allegiance to the people who make those results happen, the means towards those results. You have to pay attention to the means and the ends. And if the ends are more money or more market share or greater services, then the means to making those happen are the people that you lead. You know, I think that to be a better leader, you have to recognize that your very success as a leader is an outcome of other people's performance. You're successful as a leader to the extent that your people are loyal, motivated, performing well. That's the best reflection that you're being a good leader. So it pays in terms of the treatment of them. You'll get good results. You'll get great performance to the extent that you treat your people well. It just makes good business sense to treat people well because they perform better, and that's the best reflection that you're doing a good job as a leader.
Well, you've great wisdom there, Bill. I want to make sure we give you some time to tell our listeners where they can learn more about what you're doing and your book, Leaders Open Doors. Can you give some kind of contact information for people?
Oh, of course. They can go to leadersopendoors.com. I would invite them to look at, there's three different videos out there they can look at. There's all sorts of media links, and there's, of course, ways to purchase the book out at Leaders Open Doors. I would also encourage them to go to any online retailer, look for Leaders Open Doors. And then if they'd like to get in touch with me personally, I'd love to hear from them. They can reach me on Twitter at B Treasurer. And then my other Twitter is my business, which is @TakeBigLeaps. And that's the Giant Leap Consulting. They can also reach me through my business at giantleapconsulting.com. So there's a lot of ways they can get in touch, but I hope to hear from them. I so enjoy when listeners are able to get in contact with me and share some ideas together.
Well, Bill, it's been a great experience to have had you on the show today and learning a lot more about yourself personally from what you've shared, and especially about the insights from your book, Leaders Open Doors. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, well, Matt,
absolutely, Bill.
I'm the one who's grateful, really. You guys are doing great work, and I'm so flattered and honored that you brought me on your show to share these concepts, and I believe in the real recognition that you're promoting. So thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate it. For all of our wonderful listeners, we invite you to keep coming back to learning more about real recognition and, of course, how to build relationships, inspire greatness, and create a workplace where people can thrive. Of course, Max and I invite you to offer your comments and suggestions by reaching us at rideau.com. That's rideau.com/radio. And then when you get there, tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, and we'll send you a small token of our appreciation. Thanks for listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. Until next time, this is Roy Sonneson along with Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Sonderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.